This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on your smartphone. Simply go to the podcast app and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are now more ways to stay in touch with your union than ever before. You can follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out our website, www.dc37.net, and call our hotline, 212-815-7555. If you have any comments about our show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Your feedback is always welcome. Tonight, we welcome back to the program our executive director, Henry Garrido. We're going to be talking about the town hall meetings that Henry and other union leaders are holding throughout the city in the month of May. Earlier this week, Henry spoke at a May Day rally in Washington Square Park, and we're going to play a couple of minutes of his remarks.
It's labor in the house. It's labor in the house. Now, you know this. When Wisconsin was in the heat, there was a phrase that we all sang, and it went something like this. Show me what democracy looks like. Show me what democracy looks like. Let me hear you say me. Show me what democracy looks like. Show me what democracy looks like. Brothers and sisters, this is a nation of immigrants. And as an immigrant coming here, I am proud to call myself union. I am proud to call myself union, because she was absolutely right. Those who are going after labor rights are going after immigrant rights. Those who are going after the rights of those who want to protest, like the students in Parkland, Florida, they are going after our individual rights. Can I hear it out for the students and those who are standing up for gun rights in this country? We cannot accept any more dying, any more death. And so we are here in labor, proud to stand with the immigrant community, proud to stand with the women's rights community, proud to stand with every resistance movement that is standing up to a son of an immigrant. That son of an immigrant is Donald Trump. Boo. Come on. So we stand here today in solidarity, not only celebrating May Day as what it is true. Let's keep up the fight. Let's keep up the resistance. Let's not get tired, brothers and sisters, to the death.
Joining us now by phone is DC 37 Executive Director Henry Garrido. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
We're doing town hall meetings throughout the month of May, encouraging members to come out and talk to union leadership. What are some of the issues that you want to talk about in these conversations with members?
Well, obviously, chief among the issue is the discussion about the impending Supreme Court case called Janus versus AFSCME that is threatening to put upside down all the entire labor movement. By the efforts of the right wing to try to take away the rights of workers and the voice in the workplace. So the main focus of this town hall meeting is to inform the members what's going on, not only with the case, but what are the things that are to be expected if the Supreme Court rules in favor of the business community and in favor of the right wing community to try to take away the workers' rights.
And what is at stake? I mean, let's talk a little bit about what's at stake and what people should know for anybody who can't get to a meeting, for example.
I think entirely too much has been made about this, about an issue of union dues, and not enough has been discussed about the collective voices of the workers and the ability for workers to collectively address the problems in the workplace. And I think that when the Gould case was decided in 1977 and has been reaffirmed ever since, the idea that the collective bargaining process, it's a works,
right,
that it allows for give and take from both management and the unions, that the workers have a collective voice that can speak in order to address the difficult problems in the workplace, and that they're threatening to undo a lot of that by saying to some workers, you do not need to be part of the collective. You can do better on your own. You can take union membership, and individually you can do better. And history has demonstrated that that has not been the case, that an individual, in terms of negotiations, that the relationship, in power relationship between the workers and the employer, it's always going to favor the employer. So the stronger that we have a position in bargaining, then the better we are. And the way to get that strength is to collectively do it on behalf of all of its workers and all of its members. So they're selling this fallacy over the issue of personal liberty and over the issue, quite frankly, of economics, and saying, take your money and run. You could do better on your own. But of course, who benefits from that? The real group that benefits from that is the employers, the business community, the powerful interests who have already an interest of maintaining this inequitable balance of power in the workplace and maintaining a system where employers can do whatever they want, essentially, with the people that you know, work for them. And I think that's, we're trying to get this town hall to explain to the members what the case is about, but also to hear from them about how they feel about that. And I have to say, Chris, we've only done a few of them so far, but the overwhelming majority of the members and have expressed the voice that they're not going to let the Supreme Court case take away their union.
You know, it's a complicated, there are complicated issues, there are complicated terms, things like agency fee payers, what's the difference between agency fee payers and members. But at the heart of it, what you were just talking about, this idea that collectively, that we know from history, that collectively we are much stronger than when we try to take on the employer one by one. That you're saying that that message is getting through, or you're sensing that our members understand that.
Yeah, for our members, I have, without a doubt. I think they understand what it means, and that they understand that together we are stronger, and that this idea, they're skeptical about this idea that, you know, individually you'll be able to do better, because they've seen it in the workplace. Every time that they have a problem or every time there's a dispute, it's the union who stepped up together and say, no, we're coming here on behalf of the workers, and the employers have to listen, and they have. And this idea that somehow they are going to do better on their own hasn't really filtered through. And maybe not be familiar with the terms of what Janus is, or what the terms of agency payers, or
right,
you know, the nuances of opt-in and opt-out, but they do understand the general concept that the collective power, the strength of the union, relies on the collective sum of all its members.
And we have to tell folks there are going to be people who are going to come after them and say that you can do better. And these people are going to have very sexy sounding names, like the, you know, freedom fighters and the liberty for all. And those people are not our friends, right?
That's correct. And they've hijacked this message of liberty and, you know, and all these great sounding right to work terms. That in effect, they intended to mean, they actually mean the opposite of what that is. But they're trying to make it sound in order to preempt, because let's face it, they cannot call themselves the greatest bloodsucker bastards that they are.
Right.
And so they come up with very, you know, they hire PR firms to come up with these great sounding campaign slogans and titles that are, when in reality, they're intended to do the opposite of what those titles are. But being brought up. And I think that we have to be very transparent and very clear with our members that the Freedom Foundation, the Empire Center, the National Rights to Work Legal Foundation, and, you know, Americans for Prosperity, all those groups are going to try to contact them directly. They've already filed their names and filed their information, and they will be contacting them directly with this message that says, you can do better on your own. You can still get the benefit, but you don't have to pay the union fees, and you don't have to pay any of this because individually you can do better. And, you know, we also have to inform the members that as of April 1st, when the law was passed, that the union, as per New York State law, will not have to provide services if you are not a union member. And so that we're trying to encourage as many people as possible to join now. And anybody who is not in a union member, what is known as agency fee payers, to try to encourage them to become union members. And that's our plan. That's our goal then.
And that, in fact, you know, there are advantages to membership. Those advantages are profound, and that everyone should be considering that as they move forward in a post-Janus world, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of advantage. I mean, it's not just representation, but also the ability to have a vote and a say in the democratic process of the union, the ability to vote for a collective bargaining agreement. Get this, you can vote for your races, up or down.
Right.
You know, you can vote for the leadership and determine who you want to be the leadership that wants you want them to represent you. You can, you can do a lot of other things as part of the membership. And under the new law, you'll also get it, be able to receive benefit for subservience and for affordable housing and for a number of things that union members, non-union members, will not be able to do. So it's imperative that people sign up. It's imperative that people be part of the collective voice, that they say, you're not taking my union away from me, and that my voice counts. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do with town hall meetings, to carry the message.
Before I let you go on your busy day, the subject of contract bargaining and collective bargaining you just raised, what is the latest on negotiations over the contract?
Well, contract negotiations in the city, as big as this is, are always complicated. Our contract expired in September, and we've been working for the last 6 months to try to move forward a new collective bargaining agreement. There's been significant progress made. We are looking to restructure the way the health benefits do through the Municipal Labor Committee to try to get better delivery of health care and at the same time save substantial amount of money. And use part of that substantial amount of money to fund a portion of the wages. And we are also looking to fix a lot of the old-time problems that we have in the union, like the concerns with the dental problem that many of the members have raised, or the very low tuition reimbursement for career ladder programs, or the problems with inequities with certain titles like this. You know, so we're looking to do things, not just the straight wages, but also think creatively to fix a lot of the problems, including having a paid family leave part of this collective bargaining agreement. We are in discussions, and I'm happy to say we're making significant progress, and so we have a new bargaining session scheduled, but things are heating up with the contract now.
Henry Garrido is the executive director of the District Council 37. Henry is going to be speaking to members at various work sites across the city in the month of May to find out more about where he and other union leaders will be to take part in these town hall meetings. Please check the website, www.dc37.net. Henry, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
And we will talk again, sir.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, You deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. We are now joined in the studio by Vanessa Reed, a clerical associate at Kings County Hospital in Brooklyn. She is also the author of a book called Red Storm, and she has lived a life. Welcome to the show, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me.
The book, tell us about what Red Storm is about.
Red Storm is about Vanessa. It is a short version, actually, because there are two more books to come. One I am actually writing right now, which would be my second book. It's about my life, starting from the molestation, which was the beginning of my brokenness, into my years of crack addiction, into my years of domestic violence, just an all-around broken person. And it was time for me to be free. I kept a lot of stuff bottled up inside, a lot of hurt, a lot of pain, which led me to make a lot of the wrong decisions in life.
As a young person, you're saying, as a young person, it was a tough life. You grew up in Brooklyn, New York. You talk about sexual violence. You're talking about drug use.
Yes.
And how old were you when you first started using drugs?
I would say about 19.
Okay, so you were in high school, or were you?
Oh no, out of high school by then. I had already had my first child. Actually, I had a second child, which is what we were discussing before we came on air. So I was already a mom, and I ended up connecting with my daughter's father. My daughter's 30. And he was like the beginning of a second part of a nightmare in my life.
And the book came about, as we say, you grew up in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
You faced a number of challenges.
Yes.
You got into drug use.
Yes. Although
in your teens, in your late teens.
Yes.
And what put you back on the path to putting your life together?
I would have to be so honest and say God.
How did you find?
He found me.
He's got a way of doing that.
Amen. I was not looking to be saved. I was not looking to even change my life, to be honest. I was blessed to get the job with the city. But that still wasn't a part of my change. My change in me, a self-inventory, did not come until I surrendered my life to Christ. And I realized that all of the baggage, all of the hurt and pain, because I inflicted pain on others, verbal abuse, physical abuse. And I didn't understand why I was this way. I didn't like who I was. And I remember one time my daughter said to me, you know, Ma, all you like to do is fight. And I remember my oldest son said, you don't never listen. And then my youngest son was like, I can't tell you anything. And I'm like, I'm ready to attack them. But I realized my kids are crying out for me to be a mother. I didn't know how to be a mother because I wasn't mothered.
And let's be clear that you became a mother at a very young age.
Very young age.
So how old were you when you had your
first child? I was 16 years old. And I felt like my oldest son was something that I could have. This was something of my own. He belonged to me because so much had been taken from me. My youth had been taken from me. Being molested, it is a very, very hard, it's a hard way of growing up because you can't talk about it because of who you are, no one wants to believe you. And I say that because once you're molested, you become bad. You shut down. You become angry. You become withdrawn. And so instead of anyone crying out to find out what was wrong with Vanessa, they would just look at me like I was a problem. And in that era, and I talk about this all the time because I give my testimony at a lot of different events. We grew up in the what happens in this house stays in this house era, which is detrimental to people, to you.
So the not to get. Mm-hmm. Although you're writing about this in the book, so I mean, but you were molested over a period of time. This was not a singular event. This was something that was happening over a period of time and was making you
angry, bitter,
right.
resentful. I had three molesters, And one of them caused me post-traumatic stress syndrome. I did not know that I had it until I was actually writing the book. I began to hyperventilate as I talked about this incident that happened to me. And I remember so well that he was a chronic smoker. And every time he would crawl into my room, I would smell him before I saw him. And as I was typing about this, I started to hyperventilate. I started to cry, as I'm about to do, and I'm trying not to. And my coworker, who's a social worker, came out and she's like, "What's the matter?" And I'm crying. And I told her what happened. And she said, "That's called PTSD. And I said, "Well, what is that?" And she said, "It's post-traumatic stress syndrome. You're actually reliving the moment because I started to smell cigarettes." Right. I work in a hospital. You cannot smoke in a hospital. And I don't smoke. So I knew that this had to be something going on. And it was because I was experienced. I was right back at that place of the molestation.
And this is the problem with a short interview. Yeah. You don't do it justice. But you lived your life.
Yes.
As an adult, you found a job working for the city.
Yes.
At Kings County Hospital.
Yes. I was at Woodhull first. And then from Woodhull, I took the test, got certified, and went to Kings County.
So you got it together.
Yes.
19 years ago, at least, because that's when you started working for the city. You got it together. But look, I'm just trying.
Okay.
But,
yes.
But you had places. There was still more to go in terms of your redemption.
Yes.
Is that fair enough? Now,
yes.
Now I'm just curious. You talk about drug use. Did you have any experience with rehab, with treatment?
Yes, yes. Actually, it was a blessing because the judge ordered me. My children were taken away because of the crack addiction. And I was ordered by the court to go into a drug rehab. And they placed me in an outpatient program, which was a blessing for me. I was at Kings County Polydrug, which is in the K building. Okay. So right where I got recovery is now where I'm working at. So that's a blessing as well.
And good for you.
Yes.
Okay, so now you're working for the city,
mm-hmm.
and you discover religion, or you rediscover religion, or was religion part of your life at any point before?
During my domestic violence, I was beaten so bad that I began to cry out to God. I didn't know how to pray, but I knew how to say, "I need help. God, help me." And I remember I would go in my bathroom, turn on the water, and get on my knees and just say, "God, help me." And I did this for months, probably even up to a year, because my daughter's father was very abusive. He would drag me, beat me. Just the beatings were atrocious. And I just would cry out to God. But that wasn't my change. I was just crying out to a God because I knew that a God existed. But it wasn't until my aunt, who was a pastor, she would just, you know, come and get me to go to church. And I didn't want to go. I would actually, like, try to hide from her. And I surrendered, and since I surrendered, my life has totally changed.
And how did you come to write?
God, actually, I was sitting at work. My mom had just died, and I was just heavy. I was going through a lot, and I just want to just say that my mom and I had a horrible relationship because of my molestations. I blamed her. I felt that she didn't protect me. So all my life growing up, I was the black sheep, and I just didn't have a good relationship with my mother. My mother had lupus, and right before she passed, God allowed us to mend our relationship. For the first time at 44 years old, my mother told me she loved me. And it was just amazing to hear those words at 44. So, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. We were talking about writing.
So I was sitting at work. And I just heard God say, "Write a book." And I actually looked up to the ceiling.
Hold on. God said, "Write a book."
God said, "Write a book." Okay. See, when you are in Christ, you hear from him. You will actually hear from him. And it was very strong. So I know when I hear from God. And God said, "Write a book." And I looked up, which I tend to do when I hear from him. And I said, "Write a book." And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "About what?" And he said, "Your life." And I said, "My life?" And I said, "Where do I start from?" He said, "From the beginning." I said, "What do I say?" He said, "Tell the truth." And I realized there was so much to tell. I didn't want to write this book, let me just say.
Okay.
No one wants to put their business,
their
crack
pain.
Addiction,
their pain,
on in a book to go across the world. So I knew that it had to be God's prompting. I had been living my life just fine, not writing a book about all of my mess.
Although true writers write from pain. So
really?
You know, yeah, I mean, the best writers, the great artists write from a place of pain.
Okay.
And that's and there you are, feeling the spirit, and becoming a writer.
Yes.
How long did it take you to write?
It took a year. It took a year. I didn't do it every day, but when I found some free time at work, I would just write. And I loved it. I loved it because I began to, God was bringing things to my remembrance that I had totally forgot about. And I'm like, wait, this happened. And so it was amazing. And the best thing about my book is the freedom that I finally experienced and not being ashamed of who I was and where I come from. I'm not ashamed anymore.
Are you affiliated with any church? Do you
get
involved with groups?
Yes.
And all this is part of your healing, and you're hopefully healing other folks or helping to heal other folks as well. How do folks who are listening to this show get the book?
The book is available through Amazon, Kindle, ebook, and Barnes and Nobles.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There is, we're talking with Vanessa Reed. Vanessa Reed is a clerical associate at Kings County Hospital. She's a DC 37 member. She has worked for the city for 19 years. The book is called Red Storm.
Yes.
And it's about your life.
Yes.
And you are, I've just met you, and you are a piece of work. You have got energy, and you've got emotions. And when one reads the book, this is, they are beginning to read one of what you're saying. There are going to be a couple of books about things.
Yes.
And tell us what's to come.
My second book will be Red Storm 2, and it's going to talk a lot about my son. I have a son who was given up for adoption. I was very angry with my mother about that as well, because I just felt like I didn't want to give my child away. Unfortunately, I was addicted to drugs, and my mom was just fed up. She just had a couple of family members that she was taking care of, our children, her grandchildren. And she was like, I'm done. No more babies are coming up in here. At the time, I didn't understand that. I was young. And so I'm going to talk about him, because when God brings him back into my life, which he will, I just want him to know that I never forgot about him. And I'm just hoping one day to be reunited.
I knew the time was going to go by too quickly. I don't feel like we did nearly the justice to your story that one should. But when Red Storm 2 is done, you will come back and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Yes.
Maybe we'll have a little bit more time about that.
Yes.
It has been a pleasure to meet you.
You as well. Thank you.
And Vanessa Reed is a DC 37 member. She is the author of a book called Red Storm. She is writing a book called Red Storm 2, and I suspect there will be a Red Storm 3.
Yes, there will. And I'm a clerical associate level 4. I'm sorry, I just wanted to say.
You do all the clarification that you would like, my dear. This is your time. It's been a pleasure. You can get the book on Amazon.
Amazon, ebook, Kindle, and Barnes & Nobles.
All right. This is State of the Union. That's about all the time we have left on the show. To find out more about the town hall meetings that we were discussing earlier with Henry Garrido, please call 212-815-1095. To find out more about how to get the book, you can just go on Amazon for Vanessa Reed. The book, again, is called Red Storm. I'm just going to keep mentioning this, and folks are going to hear this out there and hopefully get a much better sense of the life that you've lived.
Yes.
The producer of this show is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Monocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Till next time, ciao.